A major conflict in the Caucasus was triggered on August 7th when Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili, a U.S. ally, launched a major offensive on the breakaway region of South Ossetia. A large number of civilians were reported dead as a result of Georgia's attack and provoked Moscow into launching a counteroffensive, which saw Russian troops push far into Georgian territory, backed by airstrikes. This was the most serious confrontation between Russia and the Georgian Republic since South Ossetia won de facto independence from Georgia in 1992. Russia had hundreds of peacekeeping troops in South Ossetia when Georgia attacked and said that 10 of its peacekeepers were killed in the initial fighting. Before a ceasefire agreement, brokered by French President Sarkozy, was signed by Russian President Dmitry Medvedev and Georgia's President Saakashvili on August 16th, both sides made unsubstantiated claims that hundreds of civilians had been killed. Journalists and human rights groups reported that looting and ethnic cleansing were occurring in conflict zones. U.S. politicians and corporate media commentators assert that the recent conflict between Russia and Georgia is a sign that an aggressive Russian bear has awoken 17 years after the demise of the Soviet Union and could signal a new Cold War. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Richard Falk, professor emeritus of international law at Princeton University and distinguished visiting professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who explains that the short war between Moscow and Tbilisi has a lot to do with access to oil and Washington's role in ratcheting up tensions in the region.
The fact is that on August 7th, Georgia launched an unprovoked violent attack on South Ossetia and the Russian peacekeeping presence in that enclave, and indicated their own resolve to replace the government that was there in South Ossetia with one that was much more in line with Georgia's politics and with Saakashvili's Western pro-American orientation. And it also needs to be understood that the big Russian response the following day seemed to indicate that Russia either expected some kind of challenge or they were waiting for an opportunity to teach Georgia a lesson and perhaps to send a signal to Washington not to try to be as assertive in their traditional sphere of influence.
What is it about the oil that traverses Georgia in a pipeline that is critical to this conflict?
I think the oil pipelines that go from Baku through Georgia to Turkey, to Ceyhan in Turkey, are crucial because they seem to provide the West, and especially the U.S., with a partial alternative to its dependence on Middle Eastern oil. And these are the only pipelines from the Caspian region that don't traverse either Russia or Iran. And so the idea was, from a strategic and geopolitical perspective, to have some way of getting at Caspian Sea oil without depending on either Iran or Russia to get them to the West, get the oil to the West. A friendly government in Georgia was seen as a important element in establishing this kind of energy geopolitics.
Richard Falk, is there any evidence to suggest that the Bush administration or the McCain campaign, through the campaign's chief foreign policy advisor, Randy Shuneman, who was also at the same time a lobbyist for the Georgian government last year, is it possible that they were goaded into staging this attack on southern Ossetia?
There is no hard evidence beyond those circumstantial considerations. I do think that the predisposition of the Bush presidency and the McCain candidacy is one that either directly or indirectly gave the signal to the Georgian government of Saakashvili that whatever he wanted to do in South Ossetia was quite okay with Washington. We don't have real evidence of that, but it's hard to imagine that Georgia would go ahead with a campaign of this sort if they didn't have some kind of reassurance. And that interpretation is reinforced by the fact that the Georgian government let it be known that it felt betrayed by the weakness of the U.S. response to the Russian counterattack on August 8th.
So they may have been led to believe that there would be a different kind of response.
That's what I think. I think they were led to believe that, or did believe that, on the basis of their relationship with the U.S. The U.S. had been arming Georgia, had sent training cadres there to help Georgia modernize their military. Georgia, as you know, had 2,000 troops in Iraq as part of the U.S.-led coalition there. They were the third largest military presence, which was absurd considering the size and nature of Georgia as a state. And so it probably was reasonable for Saakashvili to think that he could rely on U.S. real support in the event that Russia responded in the way it did. The neocon Bush approach, which was to try to bring Georgia into NATO, combined with this effort to place a defense missile system in Poland and a radar system in Czechoslovakia, was just too much for a resurgent Russia headed by an aggressive leader like Putin and Medvedev, to the extent that he's part of the real leadership, so that this crisis has to be understood, in other words, in this larger sense. And South Ossetia and to some extent even Georgia are pawns in this larger chess game.
That was Richard Falk, Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton University. His latest book is titled The Costs of War: International Law, the UN, and World Order After Iraq.